Tonight, though, we're going to move on into the last half of chapter 3. And let me read it here from the NIV first. It says, "Who is wise and understanding amongst you?" It's a great question. Right up front. And James sort of pulls us right in with that question. Because if James was standing here, and it's a question that is, it's going to bring something forth in us, because he says, okay, who here likes to think that you are wise and have understanding? And most of us are going to go, yeah, I don't think I'm stupid. and he brings this question out that most of us are going to go, well, yeah, I reckon I am. And from that point, what he brings out then is basically this test that goes, okay, then let's check it out. And this is the test here. He says, "Let him show it by his good life, by deeds that are done in humility that comes from wisdom. But if you harbor bitter envy or selfish ambition in your heart," don't boast about it, or deny the truth, "such wisdom doesn't come from heaven. It's earthly, unspiritual, of the devil. For where you have envy and selfish ambition, there you'll find disorder and every evil practice. But the wisdom that comes from heaven is first of all pure, it's peace-loving, it's considerate, submissive, full of mercy and good fruit, impartial and sincere. Peacemakers who sow in peace will raise a harvest of righteousness." Eugene Peterson writes it like this: "Do you want to be counted wise? You want to build a reputation for wisdom?" Most of us are going to go, "Yeah, yeah, I do." He says this: "Then live well. Live wisely, live humbly. It's the way you live, not the way you talk, that counts." I really like the way Eugene ties that one in there. It's the way you live. It's not this, it's what's happening in our life. "Mean-spirited ambition isn't wisdom. Boasting that you are wise isn't wisdom. Twisting the truth to make yourself sound wise isn't wisdom. It's the farthest thing from wisdom. It's animal cunning and devilish conniving. Whenever you're trying to look better than others to get the better of others, things fall apart and everyone ends up at each other's throats. Real wisdom, God's wisdom, begins with a holy life and is characterized by getting along with others. It's gentle, it's reasonable, it overflows with mercy and blessings. Not hot one day and cold the next, not two-faced. You can develop a healthy, robust community that lives right with God and enjoy its results only if you do the hard work of getting along with each other, treating each other with dignity and honor." James here basically puts out a test and says, okay, here is an earthly, unspiritual, thing that the people would like to say is wisdom, and here is godly wisdom, and he draws these two distinctives and says, you choose. You want to say you're wise, let's test it. It's interesting that in our world today, information is more available than it ever has been. They say that every year from here on out, information available to our fingertips will double. We've never had so much ability. Here's the thing that we find, though, is in the midst of increase of knowledge, wisdom seems to be a fleeting thing. We don't know how to live. But I found this: wisdom comes from unexpected places. I found some very wise statements. And wisdom is often learned in trial. Here's this for wisdom: never trust a dog to watch your food. Patrick, who was 10, learned that truth. Michael, who's 14, said this: when your dad is mad and asks you, "Do I look stupid?" don't answer him. It's wisdom. He also said a very wise thing: don't tell your mum that her diet's not working. Randy's wisdom was this: stay away from prunes. I don't know where he learned that, but Lauren, age 9, said this: texters aren't good to use as lipstick. Joel, who's 10, says this: don't pick on your sister when she's holding a baseball bat. Eileen, who's an 8-year-old girl, said never try to baptize a cat. It's funny, it's not just knowledge, wisdom comes often through learning. James actually says that the trials of life are what lead us to wisdom. James also says this right back in the beginning: how do we get it? How do we get wisdom? James chapter 1, anyone remember? Ask. Ask God. And how does God respond? Good. He gives it abundantly, another little bit. Good. Without finding fault. That is such a key verse from James to remember. As we come into this and there's a discussion of what real wisdom is, remember James chapter 1. He began this book with it. It says, if any of you lack wisdom, let him ask of God, who will give it abundantly without finding fault. I probably pray that more than any other verse that I know of in the Bible. I'm often just going, God, I need your wisdom, and I trust that even if I've blown it in the past, if I don't have a clue what I should have done before, I trust you that you're going to give me wisdom. That's what your word says. It's Solomon who, when he was given the choice of anything he could ask for, he said, God, give me the wisdom to lead these, your people. And God said, because you haven't asked for your own gain or selfishly, I'll give you wisdom more than any other man. Wisdom really that's going to be life-changing or world-changing is wisdom that comes from God. It's not just this natural thing. I've met a lot of people that are very intellectual and they don't have what I would call even common sense. Or wisdom how to deal with people. It's interesting here, this whole description of what wisdom, godly wisdom, has are these characteristics that are wonderful with engaging people. My mother was a doctor, and she trained in medicine at Newcastle University many, many years ago. And the university began a trial program, and this was back in the early 1950s. Because they were finding that they were, and I think it's still probably pretty true today, that the top of the top bright minds were getting into university to become doctors and studying and scoring well and learning everything and walking into hospitals and being clueless at how to relate to people. No bedside manner, no wisdom, no ability to reconcile people and issues. And so they changed the entire program back then and began actually shared time, hospital, university, because they realized there's a balance between knowledge and just wisdom in relating to people. You can't just learn wisdom from a book. Proverbs chapter 2, verse 4 says this: seek wisdom as a hidden treasure. It was this general, I was reading a few little statements about it, and he said, the world has achieved brilliance without wisdom. You know, you can keep cramming facts in your head but not grow any wiser. I started reading a book that I have at home called That's a Fact, Jack. It's a great, great book. And I forgot to bring it because I was going to read some of the great facts I'd found. So I went and found some others just a little bit ago. It's probably good to build up a little knowledge. Did you know this? That without the colouring put in it, Coca-Cola would be green. It's a little bit of fact for you. Do you know you can't kill yourself holding your breath? I wonder how many of you are going to try that. It's a fact. They say you can't do it. Your body is wired, your mind is wired, you're not going to be able to hold your breath. Did you know that your heart beats over 100,000 times a day? Did you know that a giraffe can clean its own ears with its 21-inch tongue? Did you know that the word Q is the only word in the English language pronounced the same if you erase its last four letters? I mean, here's the thing, you are growing in knowledge as you sit here. Here's one, it's important to know, it's against the law to own a dog in Iceland. If you ever move to Iceland, don't take your dog. I learned that the elephant's the only mammal that can't jump. I learned that slugs have four noses. And I learned this, that most of the dust particles in your house are dead skin. That's a fact, Jack. You now have grown in knowledge.
You got the book back.
I got paper back. How many of you feel like, though, in that time, you've grown in wisdom? Maybe a little bit. Don't try holding your breath. What is it, Trav? I appreciate your permission. But there is still this tendency to equate wisdom with intelligence. Wisdom. Use an eraser, not your hand. If you can't see what I've written there, it's wisdom, and I've divided it. Earthly or human wisdom versus godly wisdom. What he says here is, here are your characteristics, and really without saying it, James is just confirming what Jesus wrote, that by the fruits of people you will know them. By the fruits you will know where your wisdom comes from. And if you think that your wisdom is godly, then it must meet certain requirements here. Let's have a quick look. You might think you are wise, but if you harbor bitterness, envy, does that squeaking irritate anyone? Good. If you harbor any of these things, or if your move that you think is wise is geared or motivated with this, you're in trouble. But it's actually probably closer than we like to think. I wonder if you've ever been faced with a situation where you've taken offense. And this begins to grow, that you have an offense against somebody, and there's a bitterness, a resentment that begins to just seethe away inside, and you can't escape the feeling towards someone. And then you decide that it seems good to you to put this right. But the putting right of it involves getting back at that person. You ever been tempted with it? And it seems good to you, and it seems just to you, and it seems like that's probably a good way to go for this person maybe to learn a lesson. But if you start reading James here, you'll realize that's not God talking. That's not godly wisdom. I'm going to teach someone a lesson. When we just see on the other side, godly wisdom is a peacemaker. And it's wisdom that's built around another person, not myself. Envy is wanting what someone else has. Envy and jealousy are different. Jealousy is wanting to protect what I have really so no one else gets it. I'm jealous over it, and I'm jealous of another. I'm jealous for in relationships, often jealousy is just born out of that, so not wanting someone else to have. Envy is my just yearning over what they have. Wherever there's bitterness or envy or bitter envy or selfish ambition, don't boast. Don't boast that you're wise. Is the wisdom that you have, even when we proclaim it is spiritual wisdom, does it stir up dissension and does it stir up discord? It's not godly wisdom. Godly wisdom is listed here as these things. If you go to verse 17. It's pure, firstly. And pure here is not just moral purity, but it is purity of motivation. When you make decisions, what's the motive behind your decision? Is it you or is it someone else? Because when it's built around us, selfishness or self-centeredness, when your decisions are based around you, where's your wisdom fall? It's peace loving. Now, peace loving. Peace is not peace loving is not just someone who is pacifistic, because sometimes going after peace and is going to involve conflict. Craig, what was that quote you had from? It says there's a peace that can only be had by going through the war. On the other side of war, which is a fascinating quote. It was from a movie that was Arthur, wasn't it? With Sean Connery? The First Knight. But he says this, thank you. See, we have these conversations over the top of you here. He just made this quote and it made me start to think. There's a peace that can only be had by going through the conflict. There's a right peace that may only come in relationship by facing and dealing with honestly some of the conflict that may be there. it comes down to, you know, the question of war. And it's probably too big a discussion, but it's worth having in groups sometime. Is there ever righteous war? Is there ever righteous conflict? Is righteousness ever worked in conflict, that our end result, our end desire is not that there is just war? There are some people that are warmongers and they just love the fight. But there is a sense to godly wisdom that yearns for peace. There is war that goes on in a realm that we don't have any control over. There's a war that goes on in the spiritual realm over humanity. There is going to be a time where there'll be war, and Jesus comes as victor in the midst of it and declares a victory once and for all. There will be war, but what's God's intent? That there would be peace that he has yearned for since the fall of man. It's an interesting thing when I think, put yourself in this situation. I just sort of wrote this out here. Imagine yourself as the ruler of a country. And a good portion of your country is in rebellion. They have no respect for you, no respect for your law, no respect for you as a person. In fact, there's been battle after battle against the rebels, and you've had victories at times, but they still choose to rebel. And one night, you have this incredible dream and sense of understanding of what to do. And the only way to win over the rebels is to send your child, vulnerable, as an emissary to the rebels. And peace doesn't just come because he arrives there in their camp. In fact, it just stirs it up and they kill him. They kill your son. But out of his death, some of them see the wrong of their ways and they are restored to relationship with you. This is the choice you have. Is it worth that sacrifice to see peace restored and the rebels restored to you? And obviously you see the parallel. That's what God did. And the wisdom of God, because if we sat around and, you know, we were ruling our kingdom and, you know, someone comes up with this great idea and goes, "Hey, King, I have this great idea. Take your firstborn son and send him to him, and they'll probably murder him. But maybe in that murdering him, they'll see the error of their ways and some of them will be restored. That'll be great." How many of us would go, "Now that is a good idea"? And you go, "That seems insane." But godly wisdom looks and yearns for that restoration beyond the conflict. Wisdom brings peace. Romans chapter 12, 18 says this, "As far as it is possible, or if it is possible, as far as it depends on you, live at peace with everyone." So our first decision is this: as far as it depends on me, I choose to live at peace. That's godly wisdom. Maybe this stirs up some thoughts or questions, and if it does, let's throw it out for a minute. Anything that this stirs up at all. in our current world situation. It's a tough one, I'll be honest, for me. It's a tough one. Oh, that absolutely true. But where we live in this broken world, and obviously we don't walk in perfect wisdom, but what do we do in our decision-making process? How do you make your decision where there is such, you know, wickedness in the world? I struggle with it because I'm not just naturally a pacifistic kind of person. I'm just not. I would rather fight than walk away. That's the way I'm wired. And I do look at some of the things in the world and I think, what do we do? How long do we just say to some people, would you please just be nice? You know, I don't know. I have genuine questions that it stirs in me. Andrew. Exactly. Yeah.
Actually loving them to the amount that is going to cause us to lay down our lives or what's precious to us for them.
Yeah.
So it's a question.
It is. It's such a deep question. And, you know, I know we've had some heated discussions on it. And I love that we can do that, but I have to go back. I sometimes go, man, I just, you know, we should sort out some of these things. And then I come back and I start questioning myself and I go, is some of this just my motivation? Is there something in this about me? And is this just, you know, earthly and unspiritual? And this is the wisdom that James talks about. He goes, it's earthly, it's unspiritual, it's even of the devil. And I question myself, and I'm just being honest with you. Because it's not that, you know, I'd like to go, man, I'm a godly person. I'm pure and I'm peace-loving and I'm gentle and I'm not selfish and I don't have all these ambitions that rage away in me and I don't make decisions based out of this. But the reality is when I begin to look at this, I go, how much of it is there? I want righteousness because I want to appear that I'm on the side of right. I do. There's this thing that is like I want to be right.
Like you say, when you get confronted with evil, you won't back down.
Well, but you never know exactly how to respond to it. That's the thing. Trav, hang on one sec, mate. All right. I like that you keep giving me permission to carry on.
Hey, Tim.
Yeah.
As your leader. Sort of like that song Craig and that was singing earlier, real challenging, like, I go to the end of the world.
Yeah.
Give the world and tell your story. Like, looking at the earthly thing there, like, for me, bitterness, or not bitterness, but selfish ambition and self-centeredness says, I probably wouldn't go to the end of the world.
Yeah. Dude, I love your honesty, Josh, because it is. That's why when we talk about being intentional even with that stuff, the song that Craig led us in before, which is, you know, to the ends of the earth. What if you didn't hear Josh, what he's saying is, you know, we say, you know, we'd like to stand over on this side and sing that song, and Jesus, I believe in you, and I would go to the ends of the earth. And Josh is going, man, probably won't even go to the end of my street. You know, it's challenging, and this stuff is challenging to us because we have what seems right to us, but then when we start looking at what James is going, it starts to grate a little bit. It starts to rub away. Yeah, what were you going to say?
I was going to say, somebody explained once to me the love that on average people of the world might love they they'll die in my place, and that's the type of love that God has.
Yeah, that's the ultimate test of that. You know, Jesus said, no greater love has anyone than he'd lay down his life for a friend, you know, for his brother. But anyway, we go on because beyond peace loving, it's gentle. And gentleness I've heard described as controlled strength. Gentleness is controlled strength. Like when you see a father with an infant, that's gentleness. You know, you could, you know, unlovingly, you could destroy that in no time. Gentleness is that controlled strength. God's wisdom is gentle. It doesn't force its own way. In fact, it goes on here to say that it yields to others, which is the complete opposite here of self-centeredness and selfish ambition. It actually gives up its right to be right. And God's wisdom, when it's at work in us, brings us to this place where we are willing to yield ourselves. I love that it says it's full of mercy. The wisdom of God is full of mercy. And I was reading a couple of little illustrations of mercy, and obviously, you know, I think of God and His mercy in Christ and what that's meant to me. But, you know, so often I think I want justice, and we, you know, there's this strange dichotomy of the balance of justice and mercy, and justice is, you know, the right response to something, but mercy isn't just about being right. It's about being reconciled. There's a couple of illustrations of it. A mother once approached Napoleon seeking a pardon for her son. And the emperor replied that the young man had committed an offense and justice demanded death. And the mother said, "I understand, but I'm not asking for justice. I'm asking for mercy." Napoleon says, "But your son doesn't deserve mercy." And I love the mother's response, said, "Sir, it would not be mercy if he deserved it. I'm asking for your mercy." And it's recorded that Napoleon spares the woman's son because of that statement. He says it demands justice. And then says it doesn't deserve mercy. He goes, "It wouldn't be mercy if he deserved it." There's a guy who wrote a book, Try and Stop Me, Bennett Cerf, and he records LaGuardia, who was the mayor of New York City in the USA back in the 40s. And it's recorded that LaGuardia used to sit the night courts in session. He would go, and it's often the late night courts in those days where the poor and underprivileged were called in. And there's a record that he came in one night, and he used to just sit and handle misdemeanor cases. And Cerf writes this, that there was a man who was brought in before him the night that LaGuardia was sitting the courts, who had stolen a loaf of bread to feed his starving family. And LaGuardia, sitting there administering the court, insisted that there must be justice met and that he would level against this man a $10 fine, which, you know, as it was leveled, people were going, "What? He couldn't even afford a loaf of bread and now you're fining him this $10 fine," which was a significant fine in the courts then. And he said, "And I'm also fining everybody in this courtroom 50 cents for living in a city where a man has to steal bread in order to eat." And he then passed the hat around and gave the fines to the defendant, who left court with $47.50. Justice was met. His fine was paid, $10. And mercy was administered, and he left with far more money than he'd come in with. It's Jesus who tells this parable about a farmer who goes into the marketplace and he says, you know, I'm looking for people to come and work in my gardens. And he hires this guy very early in the morning and says, come and work for me, and at the end of the day, I'll pay you a day's wage. And this guy's like, wow, great, I got a job for the day. And it says that he goes back later in the day and he hires another person. He says, come work for me at the end of the day, I'll pay you a wage. Goes in at 1 o'clock and hires more. Goes in at 3 o'clock, the last moment, hires another one. Says, come, I'll pay you. And at the end of the day, he comes to the guy he hired first and he pays him. And he paid every one of them exactly the same thing. And people were getting just upset. The story that Jesus told is they were offended at him. He says, haven't I done what I said I'd do? I would pay you a fair wage. And that's so often what, you know, is offensive to us. It's like we somehow want to be self-justified. And so often when we're strategizing and thinking, this comes into play. We think about ourselves and how it reflects on us. Am I getting a fair deal at the end of the day? It goes on and it says, it's impartial. And impartial is, you know, it doesn't make decisions based on someone's standing or position or reputation, not by their clothes. We don't make our decisions based on someone's ability to do anything for us. Galatians, which we studied first, says we are all sons of God through faith in Jesus Christ, or children of God through faith in Jesus Christ. And being baptized in Christ, we clothed ourselves in Christ. And now there is no longer these cultural distinctions or positional distinctions, slave or free, or male or female, because you are now one in Christ. And the outward distinctions become nothing. And yet in our culture, they're still so big. It's amazing that we're still having these big parliamentary discussions on ethnic equality in this country. It's amazing. We think that we walk in incredible wisdom, but why are there such issues all the time? Because we're still heaps self-centered. Isaiah 11, 3 and 4 says this, and it's talking about Jesus when he comes. He will not judge by what he sees with his eyes, and he will not decide by what he hears with his ears. But with righteousness he will judge the needy, and with justice he will give decisions for the poor of the earth. And so often I'm so guilty of, I just judge by this and by this. And I try. Last thing is, it's sincere. Sincere. And sincere to me simply would be, it's not shifty. James says, from every good gift comes from the Father of lights, who has no shadow of turning. He doesn't flip-flop. He doesn't change depending on the circumstances. He's not tricky. There's nothing hidden. But it's pure and it's simple. Someone once said that what counts in life is sincerity. And once you can fake that, you've got it made. Sincerity. It's not shifty. It's not trying to get something out of someone else. To me, it's a challenging little passage. Because we like to think we walk in wisdom. As I said in the beginning, James asks almost this like catch you in question. How many of you think you're wise? And yet, is our decision making reflective of this? Or does it have tones of this? And probably we find that we flip-flop back and forward. And we live in this tension. But we should be, as James 1 says, be going, God, give me your wisdom. I want it. I yearn for your wisdom. And it says he'll give it to us without finding fault. What you're saying is the reality of that, because, you know, Jesus says all of that, because the law was an eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth, if someone does this. But you know what, Jesus came, he says, I've got a way that's going to be different. You, where someone wants something, you give it. Where they want something, you, in fact, you give more.
The thing is, really, I struggle with that. Like, did our whole legal system just rot
there? Sure. Yeah. Well, because we do live in a world. What does James say? He goes, this kind of wisdom that is self-protecting and self-preserving and me above all things and my way is, it's earthly and it's unspiritual, and we live in a realm that's what? Controlled by the devil. But here's the thing, and I think it's important to bring up, and it will come up actually next week a little bit, is we often, in all this, we want to, because this is earthly, unspiritual, and he even says, you know, of the devil or devilish, we want to start going, oh, it's the devil. Oh, it's the devil and it's evil and we've got to watch out for evil and we need to really just be fighting evil and the whole focus must be evil. James is really clear that it's not about the external. In fact, Jesus goes, forget all the outside stuff. It's what's already in here. And we can easily get all self-righteous because I'm doing, you know, the battle against the spirit. And we never are dealing with this. And we're still, you know, arrogant. We're proud and we're divisive and we're accusatory. And we set ourselves up as, you know, self-righteous judges. And we're going, yeah, it's because the devil's so bad. Man, Jesus already defeated the devil. What he's going is deal with this, because of out of our hearts are the wellsprings of life, and out of us all this evil flows. And it's so hard when, you know, the core here, there's still sickness, there's still a battle. The flesh wants to get up and go, my right. And Christ within us is going, nah, that's not what this is about. It's a challenge. It's about living our lives for others. Who is wise and has understanding amongst you? This is what it says. Let him show it by his good life, by the deeds done in humility that comes from wisdom. We can talk it all day long. What's our life lived out by? We value philosophers and those that sit on mountains and just think good things. It's not philosophy, it's the practice. It's the work of Christ within us. Anything else we need to say or ask? Or okay, I think in the world we live in, I think there really is a confusion between peace-loving or the pursuit of peace and tolerance. And those are really different ideas. You know, when we were just traveling recently, it was interesting to go into Assisi and see this image of St. Francis and the words that people have adopted, which are peace and tolerance written around him. And the one thing that, you know, St. Francis was not about was just tolerance. He did not tolerate or just put up with the way things were. He was active to see change. And peace-loving, you know, peace-loving and peace-pursuing is not just tolerating and going, well, it's okay if it doesn't affect me and, you know, we can all just get along. Because the one thing you always have to realize is that godly wisdom has a standard of righteousness to it as well. And this is where it becomes a battle for us, and you really need to continue to go back to God and be honest. I don't know how to do this stuff. My natural man, I don't get it. But he does have a standard of righteousness. I struggle with this. You know, there are personal things that I have around me that I know God's standard of righteousness, and yet there's this cry for mercy, and where's the meeting place of the two? And I struggle. But I want to know, and so we're going to finish up, and I want to take a minute and just ask God, give us your wisdom.